Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Welcome aboard the Athletic's Can't Wait Jets podcast, your nonstop shop for all things Jets with Tim McMaster, Zach Rosenblatt, and Marissa Dunn.
Can't wait!
The fallout is complete from the downward spiral that was the 2022 New York Jets season. Offensive coordinator Mike LaFleur is out. Offensive line coach John Benton is out. We're going to discuss the reasoning and where the team heads from here, here on the Can't Wait podcast. Tim McMaster here, along with Zach Rosenblatt and Marissa Dunn. Obviously, there is plenty of news to cover, but we also have Dane Brugler joining us. He actually joined us on Wednesday before a lot of this news, but we talked about Zach Wilson. We talked about the upcoming draft class. We talked about some of the other Jets rookies and how they perform versus what Dane was thinking. Great conversation with Dane. So that's going to be the second half of this episode. But first, we have to get to the changes. And Zach, it was funny, you texted, I thought we weren't going to have anything to talk about today. And then here we go.
Us, yeah.
So we have the news of LaFleur. We have Woody Johnson spoke today. Robert Saleh spoke today, which wasn't expected either. So plenty to talk about, right?
Yeah, as they say, never a dull moment over here in Florham Park. I should add, you know, this isn't about me, even though I'm gonna make it about me. This stuff never happens at convenient times. It happened at the worst possible time for me. I got into my car with my dog to drive up to New Jersey City for my parents in South Jersey. I'd been 30 minutes into the drive when I get the text from a source that they were letting that the however they phrased it, that he found,
I have that phrasing here. Yeah. I think it was, the Jets are allowing Mike LaFleur to pursue other opportunities.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Which is an interesting way of firing.
The idea was that, or the explanation was that they, he sent with the rumblings of him possibly leaving, they had gotten contact from some teams to see if his availability. And so they decided to let him go is essentially how they're phrasing it. You can parse that however you want. But anyway, this happened to me at an inconvenient time. It was very annoying. I had to like find somewhere to pull over my car, and it like took a little while to get to the exit. And then the exit I took, like there wasn't anywhere to pull over for a little while. And I was like getting mad. My dog was getting stressed out. And so I had to pull over. I had to like send a blurb for our news post. and then as I finished the drive, I'm like, you know, probably looking at my phone too much, but just like trying to dig in and find more as I'm driving with my dog and my, you know, I have groceries in the car with me and my, and all my clothes and stuff. I was very stressed and annoyed last night, not because of what happened, but because of how I find out. But I survived, and today we are here, and now we're gonna have some conversations in the coming weeks or however long this search takes. I'm sure it won't be right away. I think they're gonna be pretty thorough, so we're gonna have a lot to talk about now for a little bit, at least, like in terms of who they look at. We're gonna get into all that now, but yeah. So something, like I said, When we planned out this pod, we knew we had Dane. We did the Dane combo. At that point, we weren't sure yet. We figured maybe they would say if he was back or not. If he was back, then there probably would have been a little less to talk about, honestly. And so I'm like, all right, well, since we have that conversation with Dane, we're only going to have to talk for like 20 minutes, 30 minutes. We can do that. Now I'm worried about it. So.
do we have enough time? So I just started a 3-hour drive when the news broke, but luckily I don't have to respond to blurbs to our news team or any of that. So I just like caught up later. But yeah. As far as the, you know, big picture of this firing, one thing I wanted to bring up was when Robert Saleh was hired, a big part of the hire, right? A big thing that the Jets sold was, all right, we're hiring Robert Saleh and he's bringing with him this whiz kid, right? This offensive whiz kid, Mike LaFleur, brothers with Matt LaFleur. He's going to come in here and he's going to like just run this explosive offense. It's going to be just like what the Niners do, and it's going to be amazing. And now after 2 years, obviously that doesn't happen and Mike LaFleur is gone. I feel like to some degree, it kind of takes some of the shine off of the Saleh hiring because like half the pitch is kind of gone in a sense, right?
Yeah, I think that's kind of what he's going to run into when he's trying to find a replacement, is he has to confront the fact that no matter how good you want to talk about the defense is, and they're very good and they turned it around, and he deserves credit for, you know, putting out a lot of fires this season. I think he's been pretty adept at handling a lot of the things that have been thrown at him. But the offense got worse. It did not get better. I think they were almost stubborn in the way that they stuck with the scheme no matter what. It clearly didn't work with Zach Wilson. Zach Wilson's a big part of that. And I just think ultimately, if you go scoreless in the last three games and you have a top five defense, as they keep advertising, and you don't score enough points to win games with a top five defense, then somebody's going to pay. I imagine there was some pressure. I can't say for certain, but I imagine there at least was some pressure to make some changes from Saleh. Everybody insisted that it was his decision, both, you know, publicly and privately. They've been insisting that, you know, this ultimately was Robert's decision. But I know there was frustration from the top, especially because, you know, this is 12 years they haven't made the playoffs, and this felt, if they're ever going to make it, it was going to be this season. I mean, they started 5-2, 6-3, 7-4, whatever, and then they ended 7-10. So they had it, and they keep talking about how great the core is, and the fact that they keep saying how great the core is means that they believe something was wrong, and so they're going forward. And you know, as you said, the idea was they were trying to, you know, basically do Shanahan East here with the defense and the offense. And now they're, you know, starting from scratch almost. I think Saleh, he indicated this today. I asked him about it, and I've heard the same. They're not limiting their, which I thought they would. They're not limiting their options to people from the Shanahan tree, people from the West Coast offense necessarily. I think it's more philosophical is what he said, what he's looking at. And we can get into like some things I've heard and all that stuff. But I thought that's an interesting part about all this, that he's going, like, I think they were pretty committed to doing this scheme because they believe in it. But now it depends on both who the offensive coordinator is and who the quarterback is, because it's hard to plan an offense if you don't know who's playing quarterback as well. And that's going to be a challenge they combat when they are going to interview these guys and trying to convince them to come here or whatever, however it works. Saleh did make a point to like say all the things that are appealing about the job, and it's hard to argue with some of them. He said, you know, yeah, the top five defense, the young weapons they have on offense, listed all of them out. He didn't list Berrios, I'll say. That was like the one player. He listed like everybody but Berrios, which I'm sure fans are fine with. They have the weapons. He said they're going to invest in the offensive line, and they're going to invest in getting improvements at quarterback. And Woody kind of echoed that. And so those things are all true, but you also don't have the quarterback. You have to deal with Zach Wilson and developing him in theory. At least that's what they're talking about. You don't have an offensive line that you like can feel entirely comfortable with. And you have a staff that, if they don't make the playoffs, might not be here a year from now. So he's going to be combating that when he goes there. I think they really do believe this team can be like legit next year if they get a quarterback. So he's going to be doing a lot of, you know, I think they're going to aim high. I don't know if they're going to get the guys they aim high for. So my prediction is going to be that whoever they do wind up with, the fans are not going to be entirely happy with. And I think, you know, that they're kind of getting, you know, I don't know how the right phrase here, taste of their own medicine or whatever. Like, everybody wanted to fire LaFleur, and what I had said and what Connor said when he was on here too, who are you replacing him with? And so if they replace him with, again, we'll get into some names. There are certain ones that I think are not going to, you know, excite the fan base, and that's just where they're at. This is what they have to deal with.
Yeah. And I mean, I do think if you're a confident offensive coach, right, and you look at this roster and you know that, or if you, and you believe that the team is committed to getting the right quarterback, if you're a big enough name, maybe you have some draw on that quarterback, right? Like, and you're saying they probably don't get that big enough name that you could like actually impact the recruitment of the quarterback. But the talent is there. So I feel like the 1 year factor maybe isn't, I mean, it's a thing, obviously.
I think it depends, like, on who it is.
If you do,
I think,
your job, yeah, this team's going to be good, I feel like.
Yes. There's risk. There's risk involved with taking, right, any job, I guess. But
right.
So that, I mean, that is a good point, honestly, because, again, you look at this and they have the pieces to be good. So you have to come here believing that they're going to get the right guys in here. Like, in theory, they, you know, Derek Carr thing is going to be resolved maybe a little bit quicker than the other quarterbacks because the Super Bowl deadline or whatever it is, because of his contract getting guaranteed. If he's the guy, then maybe you can, you know, turn this around, feel more comfortable. I don't know. Maybe they wait that long to hire one. I don't really know how long they're going to take. But yeah, that, I mean, it's a fair point. I mean, this is That's the thing. I feel like this is an appealing job in the sense that this team is ready to make the playoffs. It's not like a rebuilding team where they're going into it and nobody's really sure what they're trying to do. If they're rebuilding, if they're starting from scratch, like you see that a lot. You know, I always go back to what happened with the Eagles, just because I was there for it, in 2019 when they fired Groh and they brought in all these veteran coaches. And I think they still had their eyes on like making the playoffs, but it was clear they were aging and they were kind of aging out of being like the contender that they were in 2017 and all that stuff. I think the Jets are in they're on their way up in theory. Like everything that happened this year, even with the way it ended, they're going to bring back the majority of their important players. They have a good core of young guys. Like there is appeal here for sure. So it's going to be a very interesting offensive coordinator search. And I think some of it's going to have to do with, you know, a lot of head coaching jobs are open. And so whether it's a guy that doesn't get a head coaching job or these guys that do get the head coaching jobs, are they going to pull away candidates from the Jets? Like, so I do wonder how quickly they try and get this done. I think they're going to be very thorough, so I don't think it'll be that quick, but there's a lot of factors at play here, and it's going to be very interesting to see where it lands.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager. All right, I know you've been digging into the search already. So at this point, you know, what are you hearing about? You have a story up on The Athletic, I'll say this, where you list 16 candidates, right?
Yeah.
It's a deep list, all sorts of different names in that list of 16. Obviously, maybe the Jets have 25 names, who knows? But from what you're hearing, who's number one on the Jets list if they could have anyone?
So just from conversations like this, I haven't like seen the list or anything like that, but I get the impression that they do want to at least take a shot at Frank Reich. I don't know that they believe that they even have a chance of getting him. He's interviewing for head coaching jobs.
I mean, obviously he would have to strike out on all of those.
Yes, he would have to. Almost, on top of like,
you have to wait longer for Frank Reich because of that.
Yes, and also they have to like, you know, appeal to him more than say like the Eagles, who might be looking for an offensive coordinator if theirs leaves. Like, there's going to be other offensive coordinator jobs that, you know, in theory might be more appealing. So I think, again, they're touching all their bases. I think is a big part of that. I don't know if they believe they're going to bring Frank Reich in or if they 100% want to. The other main thing that I've heard is that I would look out for candidates who have experience coaching the offensive line. As you mentioned, they fired John Benton. I think there has been some talk about some teams really going in that direction where the offensive line minded coach is kind of running the show. You know, I don't have any like names in particular. I do non-offensive line. I think Daryl Bevel is a real candidate. They have a long list. I'll say that. I know that much. And I think Bevel is on. He has ties to Robert Saleh. From Seattle. He's on the Mike McDaniel coaching staff right now as a quarterbacks coach and passing game coordinator. So he's learning a new, like the Saleh scheme in a way, or the LaFleur Shanahan scheme. So, and he brings a little bit, like he was with Pete Carroll. He was with Urban Meyer. I don't know how much of an effect of that in, but So he's like, he's, I think he's the name that in particular, I think that make checks a lot of the boxes and makes the most sense that fans would not be very excited about if he was the OC, but he's a veteran play caller that has done it. But the offensive line thing, I haven't been given any names, but just like, you know, thinking and digging, like looking at coaching staffs, I think Bill Callahan is someone who would make sense in that regard. And I think he's on the Dolphins staff. Chris Forrester is an offensive line slash like running game coordinator, I believe, for the Dolphins. So I think guys like that are, I think they're going to look around those. They're going to look around the veterans, the big names. Ultimately, like I said, you're more likely to end up with a Darrell Bevell than a Frank Reich, though.
Just to go through a couple other or a few other names, one that you have on your list in that story, and that's also popping up a lot here in the chat right now. So I'll go to that. Is Greg Olsen, who has a lot of experience. He's been an OC in a lot of different places, and he's another guy with some West Coast roots.
Yeah, and another thing to keep in mind, and I'm not 100% sure if they're sticking with this plan or not, but I imagine they probably will. Is that they wanted to bring a veteran coach in to assist with the offensive coordinator. So whether, you know, let's say they hire a Bevell, like I could still see them, like Greg Olsen is only like an analyst on the Rams staff right now. So whether he's the offensive coordinator, or they bring him in as a QB coach or senior assistant or something like that, I think Olsen makes a lot of sense, especially if they're interested in Derek Carr. I think as a lot of people have pointed out, he gave Derek, his best seasons were with Derek Carr and Olsen together, I think had like a great relationship. So that would be an interesting one. You know, there's a couple of bigger names on the list that I'm not as confident with. Are like being seriously considered, but like I don't think Cliff Kingsbury is going to be working anytime soon. He's going to be getting paid through like 2027. So
can you see him too going back to college? I mean, yeah, maybe not with
maybe not right away, but
like it's college game is.
Yeah, I'm interested to see what happens with him. You know, Nathaniel Hackett, he did work with Saleh in Jacksonville. I think that might have been the only head. I mean, Gary Kubiak, it sounds like is probably not going to come out of retirement. I don't know if they've tried talking to him, but I think that's the impression I get. But, you know, the Washington just fired Scott Turner. He's a son of North Turner. He has experience calling plays, and it's hard to call plays for Carson Wentz, which I think is probably part of the issue he had in Washington. There are options out there. I don't know if all of them are as enticing as fans were hoping. Everybody wants Frank Reich, including maybe the Jets, but I don't see that happening, and I don't think they do either. So you have to kind of set your expectations a little lower and hope that they fill out this. You know, they need a replace Miles Austin as well. They're letting him go. He was suspended for gambling and all that. So they need to replace the offensive line coach, the wide receivers coach, the offensive coordinator. Maybe you add a senior offensive assistant. Maybe the offensive coordinator comes in and he's like, I don't want Rob Calabrese at QB coach anymore. So it's going to be a new look staff. And it's going to be, you know, this might dictate what happens this season. That combined with the offensive line, combined with what they do at quarterback, is going to go a long way toward everybody finding out what this team's going to look like next year.
As far as like fans not being excited about the hire, if it is somebody that's like less of a name, I will say this, like, I think 2 years ago, people were very excited about Mike LaFleur, right? Because of what I said at the top, like he was supposed to be this rising star. Yeah. I mean, you said it in your story and we talked about it in November. He was on one of NFL.com stories as future head coaching, you know, candidates, and maybe he will be, who knows? Like he's going to obviously have no trouble getting some kind of job from here and to try to kind of put the pieces back together. But like, that was an exciting young offense coordinator hire and it didn't work. So maybe like you get somebody that people aren't excited about now, but maybe it does work. You know what I mean? Like, let's see what happens is basically what I'm saying.
Yeah. And I'm, you know, I do wonder if they look at like, if they're committed to getting a veteran play caller, like do you want to go back to a rookie one? Like there's Brian Johnson from the Eagles was mentioned, QB coach, doesn't have any play calling experience in the NFL. There's a bunch of options. Like they could go to the college level in theory, but I think based on what went wrong last year, like I don't know if you want to take the risk. You don't want another person learning on the job kind of thing. So I don't see that happening. Like somebody that's never called plays before, I wouldn't rule it out completely, but I'd be a little surprised if they hired somebody who has just never done that. So these are all things to keep in mind. You know, it's a fluid process. Things are going to change. Maybe other people will come available that nobody expects or something. But, you know, they have to combat the fact, like I said, that this staff is going to be, whether Woody wants to say there's a playoff mandate or not, they're going to be playing, they're going to be coaching and general managing for their jobs this year. So.
One more thing on the search, assuming that they're going to bring in some sort of veteran quarterback, How important is it, because Zach Wilson's still going to be on the team more than likely, how important is it that the new coordinator has some experience or some evidence that they've actually developed a quarterback in their career? Or is that a secondary hire with the offensive coordinator?
It's a good question. I do wonder how much they're factoring in Zach Wilson to the equation. If they really are committed to getting an upgrade at quarterback, I don't know if he's like that much of a factor. I do think they hope to salvage him because, you know, they drafted him so high, but I don't know if that's like a sticking point in the conference. Like I said, like these offensive line coaches, that I don't know that they necessarily have groomed quarterbacks. So in theory, they could bring in a quarterback coach with them or something, but
right.
I don't know. That's, I think we're going to be able to tell how they feel based on who they hire. If they hire somebody with a quarterback background, then I think you can say, okay, I think Zach was a factor here.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. All right, so Woody spoke today as well. I want to touch on that a little bit. You mentioned that he said there's no playoff mandate. He said playoff mandates don't work. I think there is a way to have a playoff mandate without actually saying there's a playoff mandate. So whatever, but we'll leave that off to the side. He said he was willing to spend for a quarterback. He said that he failed Zach too, but I thought one of the interesting things that you had and you put out there, Zach, was that I guess his perspective of what the fans think at this point seems a little off. Like, I don't know, but he's a guy that's on Twitter a lot, so I don't quite understand.
Yeah. So I asked him, I think this is a question that owners get a lot, at least in my experience, I cover the Giants after you've been losing for a while, is, you know, what do you say to the fans who are tired of waiting or tired of hearing that we're close and all that stuff? And he said, well, I don't think they are tired of it. He said he walks through the parking lot before games and he senses a lot of optimism. And I think he did follow that up, like saying that he knows that, let me pull it up. Here it is. He said, they've been optimistic. I want to give them what they want. They want wins. They deserve wins. And I'll try to get them wins. I'm going to do everything I can to make it happen for them. No stone unturned. I think that part of the quote is a little better, where he's saying,
yep,
we're going to do everything we can to get those wins. I don't know that fans are not tired of hearing how close they are. But they have the longest playoff drought in football. And let me tell you, Jets fans are an angry bunch. I just joined this beat. And I can tell you that. They're angry.
I mean, the first thing
they're tired
I thought,
of waiting.
The first thing I thought when I saw that out there was like, which parking lot is he walking through?
it's a great question. I've gotten in trouble for making jokes about there not being traffic at MetLife before, so I won't.
Yes,
say
yeah.
Anything about
there.
So I don't know. He didn't say anything like bad. I would say I think he said mostly the right things. He stated his commitment to Robert and Joe, and he insists that he's not interfering and it's all their decisions, and you can believe that if you want. But ultimately, if it's this time next year and they haven't made the playoffs again, I imagine the next time that time he talks to us, it's going to be with a new coach or new general manager.
Yeah. I'll just say this before we shift speeds a little bit and go to Dane. Anything else to add on Mike LaFleur and what went down today?
Yeah. I will say I don't know for sure that, and I know everybody's assuming that Saleh's hand was forced with LaFleur getting fired. I don't think it necessarily was 100% Woody. I'm sure there was like some sense of dread from Saleh that, you know, if at any moment, if the offense kept being poor, would he, you know, say you have to fire him now kind of thing? Or would he, you know, get mad in other areas or whatever it is. So ultimately I think Saleh had made the best decision he had to go forward. And I think he handled it in a way that, you know, makes it look like LaFleur has a lot of interest, whether he does or not. I think maybe he does. I think he's, you know, he has the name brand and comes from the Shanahan tree and all that stuff. I think he'll land on his feet. So I think Saleh tried to frame this in a way that helped LaFleur while also acknowledging that they needed to make some changes. And so I think that's something just to keep in mind.
Yeah, I think they let him down pretty softly, so to speak. Definitely. All right. Well, we are going to take a short break, and then Dane Brugler is going to come on, and he covered a lot with us. Great conversation. He talked about Zach Wilson and what he thought about Zach 2 years ago versus now. He talked about the great rookie class this year for the Jets and how they've kind of stood up to what he expected. And then talks about this year's draft and where the Jets are picking, who could be there. So great conversation. Stay with us after this break.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Don't just ride the index, seek to outperform it with Fidelity Active ETFs. Learn more at fidelity.com/active ETFs. Before investing in any exchange-traded fund, you should consider its investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Contact Fidelity for a prospectus, an offering circular, or if available, a summary prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully. While active ETFs offer the potential to outperform an index, these products may more significantly trail an index as compared with passive ETFs. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
All right, and we are excited now to welcome in Dane Brugler, draft expert at The Athletic, of course, the author of The Great, The Beast, which will be coming out before the draft this spring, and host of Prospects to Pros, the podcast on The Athletic Podcast Network as well, along with Andy Staples and Lance Zierlein. Dane, it is way later than we usually talk to you, which I guess is a tip of the cap to the Jets in some way, although I think the fan base right now isn't very thrilled about how things finished. The fact that they got off to a good start and were in playoff contention meant that we weren't thinking about the draft on this podcast really until now. So I guess in some ways I apologize that we couldn't get to you sooner, but the Jets actually played meaningful games in December.
Yeah. And you know, usually I'm used to talking to you guys before Halloween. So this is yeah. a change up, you know, it's January, you know, it's the off season. So, but that's great for Jets fans. You know, I think it's this is an organization that has been very draft focused for a lot of years now. And okay, trying to get over that hump, and we feel like they're close, but still some areas where they need to get better and where the draft could come into play and help them take that next step, hopefully.
One area where the draft probably won't help them, but they do need to get better, is obviously quarterback. So I just wanted to start there with Zach Wilson. You know, obviously he was the number two pick, and I think I didn't go back and check, but I think you were pretty high on him coming out of BYU. So when you see what has happened to him at the pro level, how surprised have you been at his lack of development?
Yeah, no, thanks for ruining my credibility
right up the top. Yeah.
Yeah. And look, in my defense, I think
you are not alone.
No, yeah.
And dozens and dozens of teams would have drafted Zach Wilson at number two. So this is not like a Jets thing, or let's beat up on the Jets for taking him. He was, it wasn't universal, but it was close to universal that Zach Wilson was the number two guy in that draft behind Trevor Lawrence. He's the latest example of how it's just difficult to evaluate the quarterback position, because, you know, a major factor in the college to NFL transition is just being able to catch up to the speed of the game. And that's not really something that you can quantify through any metric or just watching him on tape. It's just not that easy. You know, when you watch him at BYU, you saw a quick-minded player. You watch him in the NFL, you don't see a quick-minded player. And so it's just a matter of catching up to that NFL speed. You go back to his college days, that last year, 2021, you saw, or 2020, you saw a guy that had a feel for placement. You saw a guy that was very comfortable throwing off platform. The competition was underwhelming that year for BYU. That was the COVID year. But there were plenty of examples where he was pressured and he had to create. He had to do something off structure that wasn't the design of the play. So you saw creativity. You saw a guy that he broke Steve Young's completion percentage record at BYU that year. I think he had 42, 43 total touchdowns. So there were a lot of reasons to be optimistic based off of what he did in college. It's just he has not made the adjustments needed for the speed of the NFL game. And everything is moving way too fast for him. And the most concerning thing for me is just the lack of progress in year two. So, you know, it's a tough thing. And so where do the Jets go from here? Is it a matter of it's just going to take time? Is it a matter of, you know, you need to get some maybe new voices in that quarterback room? I don't know what the answer is. I think that obviously, you know, Coach Saleh and the Jets, they're with him every day. So they have a better idea of maybe some of the issues and how to address them this offseason. But I'm fascinated to find out, you know, just what their confidence level is, even though they'll never really be transparent about that. Yeah. But what their realistic confidence level is for Zach Wilson moving forward.
And Dane, I'm curious, and not even just about Zach, but like when you're like high on a guy coming out of college and then it becomes a disaster like this. I mean, Zach's a little bit of a unique one, obviously, because of the way it's played out. But like, I'm curious, like, do you go back and like look at like, all right, what did I miss here kind of thing? Like, obviously, you're not going to get every single guy right. So I'm just curious, like, how your process works with like that kind of stuff once they get to the league.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, I think that the best evaluators are the self-evaluators. People that, you know, you go back and understand, okay, what did I miss? Sometimes it's as simple as focusing too much on a player's tape earlier in the year when they were dinged up, or, you know, maybe you missed something. I mean, there's always something that you can gain from going back and learning. And Wilson's a tough one. And honestly, I believe in waiting at least 3 years, giving a player a chance to grow as a pro, climb out of that hole maybe they created for themselves in the first year, second year. So for Zach and his class, I won't go back and, you know, kind of look at their college tape until probably for another year.
Yeah.
Just to, you know, give not only Zach, but the rest of the players in his draft class, a realistic chance to, you know, show progress and get better. So, but yeah, that self-evaluation is definitely a big part of this.
What do you think about this QB class now as we sit here at the end of the second year? Cause I feel like it's been like very up and down in a very wild way, I feel like.
Yeah. And I think Trevor Lawrence, you know, he was anointed as the clear-cut guy, franchise guy. I think he was the universal number one pick that year. And, you know, the Jaguars are in the playoffs in his second year. And that's progress. And I think that he was kind of hamstringed a little bit last year with the coaching situation. And then this year with an offensive-minded head coach and some talent around him, we've seen positive things. And, you know, he's far from a perfect player. I think he's still a young player working through things. But that's been great to see. Justin Fields, you know, he fell a little bit more than, and, you know, we talked about this throughout that draft process that year, how, listen, Justin Fields is not as well liked in the NFL as he is on Twitter. And we talked about that, you know, ad nauseum, just because I think a lot of fans thought, oh, he's the easy number two pick. It wasn't that. That's not how NFL teams viewed him. And now, you know, to Justin Fields' credit, I think he's, you know, maybe kind of saying, hey, I should have been that number two quarterback drafted. But, you know, he still has a long way to go, too. I mean, Justin Fields, what he's doing with his legs has been awesome. But if you isolate just his passing tape, and there's a lot of areas where he needs to get better. He has some really impressive throws, but the body of work is just not there yet. And so, but I think he's shown enough progress that it, totally understand you being optimistic about where he's going to be a year from now, 2 years from now. And then unfortunately for Trey Lance, we have not been able to see him, you know, be able to do anything because of sitting his first year and then the injury in his second year. And so you hope that he gets healthy, is able to be out there because there is so much to like there with his talent. And then Mac Jones, I think Mac Jones can be a functional NFL quarterback. He can be good enough to help you reach the playoffs, compete for the playoff. I mean, the Patriots weren't this year. So Mac Jones, I think has kind of been what we thought he would be up to this point. So yeah, overall it was, you know, we had never seen four quarterbacks or five quarterbacks go to the top 15 like they did that year. And it never happened before. And so a lot of hype around that quarterback class. And so far, definitely a lot of mixed results, like you said.
Looking back at that draft, it is crazy when you just look at the top 15, the non-quarterbacks. It's like
loaded.
It's got to be one of the best of all time. Like, I mean, it's early, but that always blows. Especially the Jets don't feel great about that now, especially that they look at that and Micah Parsons and all those guys in there. But you know, the flip side of Zach obviously is this Jets 2022 draft, which was pretty spectacular in their first year. I know you obviously were high on Sauce, but like, could you have imagined him? I mean, there are people who think he had like the best season of any cornerback in the league this year. What was your expectation for him coming in? And like, has his like success surprised you on the flip side?
Yeah, Sauce was a little bit of a slow burn for me throughout last year, his last year at Cincinnati. And really, it's just because nobody threw at him. And so you watch the Cincinnati tape and he's clearly good. But how good? You know, is he top 5 good, top 10 good, top 20 good? And so, but at a certain point, you just have to look at it and say, look, this is a guy, he's 6'3", 33 and a half inch arms, runs in the low 4.4s, has ball skills, didn't allow a touchdown as a 3-year starter, didn't give up a catch of over 20 yards last year as a junior. So this guy just had the traits. He had the tape. He had the, you know, had a lot of the production, had at least 3 interceptions each of his 3 years with the Bearcats. And he's dripping with confidence, which you need at the position, the mental toughness. And so obviously there's a big jump going from covering AAC receivers compared to NFL receivers. And so that's where there was a little bit of a, okay, maybe there'd be a learning curve for him. Maybe, you know, there could be some tough moments. But, you know, when you look at the traits, the talent, the confidence, it's not a surprise to see him have this type of success. You knew he had it in him. And now it's a little surprising maybe as a rookie, just because corner is just such a tough position to play when you're going up against some of the monsters we have in the NFL at receiver. But he has all the traits to be the best cornerback in the NFL in the very near future. He has it. And so and what he did as a rookie, man, that was a lot of fun.
Yeah. And I think the Jets are even surprised by what he could do. Then with Garrett Wilson. So when I watched him in training camp, you know, my prediction for him was that it was going to like take him some time to get into the swing of the NFL because you could see like the athleticism and like, you know, the all the ability he had, but he was also dropping a lot of passes. I think the route running was still developing. So what I saw in training camp, it was not the same as what I thought was going to happen in the season. I'm curious what you thought the trajectory was for Garrett when you were scouting him, because he's also someone who I think has been way better than I expect, at least this quickly. I thought he was going to be this good at some point. I didn't think it would happen this fast with him.
He's another guy that I thought, you know, clearly has the talent. So it's just one of those guys that once the game starts, just go let him have fun and go see what happens. And so I'm not completely shocked that he did this as a rookie with some up and down quarterback play. So to me, I mean,
Mostly down, right, exactly.
And he was the best wide receiver in this draft class. I thought that was clear. And so it's refreshing to see him play like the best rookie wide receiver this year. The number one thing watching him at Ohio State, he made the playbook come alive at all three levels. No matter what you asked him to do, he made it come alive. And so just about everything about his game you loved, except for ordinary size. He's under 6 foot. He's under 185 pounds, but when you watch him, he plays so much bigger than that because he's long. He's got body control. The ball skills are outstanding. And I remember talking to Garrett at the combine, sitting down with him, and we talked a lot about his basketball background. He was a legit Division I basketball recruit in high school, and I think all that basketball training really helped develop his route athleticism and the ability to make guys miss and just be an athlete out there. So you factor in all the Ohio State coaches told me how the moment he showed up as a freshman, he acted like a senior. So you've got a guy that's a pro, he's mature, he's got the talent, and he's got the mentality to be a true number one receiver. And so I think he's on that trajectory, and he showed it pretty quickly. He's a guy that if you passed him walking down the street, you wouldn't think, oh, that's a number one NFL receiver. You know, that's just not, you know, he doesn't give up that vibe when you just talking to him. But when you watch him on tape, you watch him play between the lines, I think you definitely see it.
One thing that fascinated, this has kind of been the Jets in general because they're so young, but you mentioned like the thing about the coaches saying about how he just carried himself like that. He quickly became like, for us as media, usually you go to like a veteran guy when things are tough. Garrett Wilson's like was like the number one go-to guy for us when things, because he was like honest, he would like vent his frustrations with us. He was very well spoken and well thought, and sauce too. Like I've never covered rookies like those two guys before, so I'm sure honestly that's a part of the valuation when they talk to these guys and they see like how they think and stuff like that, right?
Well, and that's funny that you say that, because I noticed that, you know, following you on Twitter and like after games, I'd always see a quote from Garrett Wilson, and, you know, whether it was about the quarterbacks or, you know, whatever, like that surprised me a little bit because he is a rookie, and usually, you know, you're getting, you know, rookies are maybe a little reluctant to talk. A lot of times teams are reluctant for their rookies to talk. But he was a guy that always, I thought, shot it straight and gave you a realistic view from a guy that hasn't been playing professional football for very long. So that was great to see. And I think that does it's something that matters in the evaluation process for, you know, Joe Douglas and the front office and what they're looking for. Intangibles matter. And you look at Sauce, you look at Garrett Wilson, you look at Jermaine Johnson, you look at Breece Hall, you look at, you know, a lot of the guys that they've invested in, especially this past draft class. Intangibles, guys that are culture guys, guys good for the locker room. You know, I think that was definitely a priority as they try to build up this roster.
Yeah, and I think they probably learned their lesson with some of the mistakes they made, like in past drafts. You know, Makai, who I think is like a good kid, but maybe a little immature, and Denzel Mims, and guys like that that you know, maybe need a little more seasoning in the maturity side of things. So I think,
I wasn't gonna say it, but I'm glad
you I can say it. we can switch gears to looking at this draft now. Finally, talk to you about some guys. So the Jets, I think it's pretty clear like what they need a quarterback. I don't think they'll draft one unless they really, really loved a guy. But the positions that I think fans in particular are looking at are offensive tackle and safety are the top two. I mean, you could always see Joe Douglas drafting like a defensive lineman, stuff like that. But at offensive tackle, I think the offensive line is the biggest thing they need to fix outside of quarterback. So I looked at like some of the guys. I know Paris Johnson, Peter Skoronski, yeah. Broderick Jones, I think are like the top guys probably. But what do you think about those guys and their ability to come in and like help an offensive line like the Jets need right now?
Yeah, it's a really interesting offensive line class. And I think it starts with those two Big Ten guys you mentioned. Peter Skoronski at Northwestern, Ohio State's Paris Johnson. Johnson is more of your prototypical left tackle. 6'6", 310 pounds, body control, play strength. There's a lot there that you like now and what you think he can continue to grow into. Skoronski, he checks a lot of boxes as well. The foot quickness, the processing, technical refinement, but he also has a guard body. 32 and a quarter inch arms. That's, you know, a lot of teams, they want at least 33, 33 and a half. Yep. He's got 32 and a quarter. That's going to be an issue for a lot of teams. It's his tape says I'm a left tackle, but the arm length is going to move him to guard for a lot of teams. And the Jets, that'll be interesting if he's on the board. You know, what, 2 years ago, that same draft that we were talking about, 2020, Rashawn Slater, we talked about yep. his arm length a ton that draft process because it was, I think, 33 on the dot. He fell to the 13th pick, which he was better than that, and ended up having an all-pro season as a rookie left tackle for the Chargers. Skoronski, I doubt him at your own risk, even though he doesn't have the arm length that you ideally want. If he were to be available there at 13, if he falls that far, to me, that's just a guy. Joe Douglas will love him. I have no doubt about that. It's just, can you do you feel good enough about him staying at left tackle or at the tackle position in general to draft him there? And then Broderick Jones from Georgia, who some scouts thinks the best tackle in this class, at least has the most upside. His movement skills are outstanding. Still a young player. You know, there's times where he loses balance, or there are times where his hands aren't landing with the placement that you need to see. But it's all coachable stuff, all fixable things. And so Broderick Jones, he'll be right there in that top 15 conversation as well.
And so because the Jets have Elijah Vera Tucker, who can play like every position now, they have the ability to pick the best offensive lineman on the board in theory. So is like at guard Osiris, what's his name? Osiris Torrance. He's the top guard, right?
Yeah. And he's a true guard. Yeah. I mean, he's 345, 350 pounds, power guy. You know, he's had a really nice career. He was at Louisiana Lafayette and decided to challenge himself. He was going to be a top 50, top 60 guy, no matter what. He decided to challenge himself, goes to Florida for this past year, and he played really well against SEC competition. So there's a very good chance he ends up in that late part of the first round. I think top 15, top 20, that'd be early, in my opinion, to take him. But in a scenario where the Jets are moving back or moving up and they're in the late first round, early second round, Torrance would be a guy to consider.
Gotcha. And then at safety, are any of these guys good enough to go that high, or would that be more of a like second round type thing?
I think that Brian Branch, the Alabama safety / nickel, is one of the best players in this draft. You can't make a list of your top 20 best players in this draft and not include Brian Branch, in my opinion. So I think that he should at least be in the conversation there at 13. This is a guy that, you know, the size doesn't necessarily wow you, but he's so smart. He plays that star position that Minkah Fitzpatrick made popularized in Nick Saban's defense. And you know, it's kind of cliche, you know, you're the extension of Saban out there and all that. He really is. I mean, he is so smart. You can play him in the nickel as a man player against the slot. You can play him as a post safety. You can do a lot of things with him. And I think that versatility is key. So, it doesn't matter the personnel packages, doesn't matter down a distance. You feel good about him out there, and he's sticky in coverage. He leverages very, very well in coverage, but also the run game, takes proper angles. And he can play man-to-man, can play zone. Very good tackler. So he's a guy you don't need to hide a little bit. I mean, he can play in coverage. He can play versus a run. I'm a big Brian Branch fan. And so if you're looking for a safety, I think that he would be high on the list. There's some other talented safeties in this group. None that are on Brian Branch's level, in my opinion. But, you know, it's Antonio Johnson from Texas A&M is a really talented player. I think has at least a chance to go first round. I don't know that I would put him in Brian Branch's tier level, in my opinion, based off what I've seen so far.
Yeah. All right. And then so at quarterback, like I said, obviously I don't think they would draft one, but like, let's say they've moved on from Zach Wilson. They want to win right now is the goal. So if like Will Levis or like CJ Stroud somehow fell to them at 13, like what do you think about the idea of plugging that guy in as a starter? Like, do you think that those guys can lead the Jets like as a rookie kind of thing?
Yeah, I think that this quarterback class is fascinating, and there's a lot of teams in front of the Jets that could use a quarterback. And so if one of these guys were to slip all the way to 13, I don't like, if you're the Jets, I don't think you're expecting that, but if it did happen, that makes things interesting. I'm a big Bryce Young fan. I think he's special. He's a complete size outlier. In a lot of ways, he's Steph Curry. It's his favorite player, and a size outlier who just doesn't miss. Now I do worry a little bit about the body type and the fact that he almost welcomes the chaos because that's how he thrives, is off script, moving the pocket, that type of thing. But still, I'm Bryce Young, to me, the best quarterback in this draft. He does not go one with a trade with the Bears, I'll be surprised. But regardless, he should be off the board pretty quickly. And then with CJ Stroud, I had plenty of doubts about Stroud and his ability. I love him as a passer, questionable as a creator. And this year, or the final game against Georgia, we saw him as more of a creator, a guy that, okay, plan A is taken away. Well, here's plan B. Let me move around a little bit. Let me find something off platform. Let me make a play. And he showed that he could do it. And that's definitely a positive thing to take away from his tape. Will Levis, you didn't see enough production against good competition in the SEC, but he didn't have a lot of talent around him, lost his offensive coordinator. There's a lot of, you have to separate the reasons from the excuses with Will Levis. I do think that there are a lot of reasons why he fell short a little bit this year, at least up to expectations. When you're looking at the quarterback position, you want guys that are tough, both mentally and physically, and you want guys that have the traits, and you want guys that are smart. He has all that. And so it's a matter of, once you get him with your coaches and get a chance to develop him, he will be a lot better than I think what we saw this past year at Kentucky. Now, good enough to be a legitimate fight for the division, let's make a run for the playoffs quarterback. That's the question you have to ask yourself. Yeah. That's where the opinion will be all over the map from team to team in the NFL. But I will be surprised if those three quarterbacks are, if any of those three quarterbacks are still on the board outside of the top 10 picks.
Gotcha.
All right. Great stuff as always, Dane. When can people expect the beast to hit the newsstand?
Oh man. I wish I had like six more months to work on this. the first week in April is the goal, because I want to get all the pro day information in there. And usually pro days go just leak a little bit in April. So that first week in April, but we have plenty of stuff coming up here next week. Mock draft, my top 10 or 15 at each position. So,
oh, cool.
Because the underclassmen deadline is coming up here in a few days. So we'll have an exact idea of this draft class of what it looks like. So, and then the Senior Bowl combine. So we've got a lot of things coming up here that will help figure these guys out a little bit more. So it's going to be a fun process.
You can read him on The Athletic, all the great draft coverage at The Athletic, and you can listen to him on The Athletic Football Show feed, Prospects to Pros. That's every Wednesday, so check out that as well. Dane, as always, thanks, man.
Anytime. Thanks, guys.
That's going to do it for this episode of the Can't Wait podcast, but stay locked into our YouTube channel and follow us on Apple, Spotify, wherever you listen to your podcast. As the search for an offensive coordinator continues, we will have all the information you need right here. So do that and also join The Athletic. You can do it right now for $1.99 a month for 12 months. Go to theathletic.com/can't wait. Want to thank Dane Brugler for joining us. For Zach Rosenblatt and Marissa Dunn, I'm Tim McMaster. We'll talk to you soon.
Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.